you for joining us at the Arizona Daily Star's Opinion Page podcast. The point being, we are here with Congresswoman Ann Kirkpatrick, District Director Ron Barber, and folks from the Arizona Daily Star and Congresswoman Kirkpatrick's office. We're going to talk about things that are going on. There's a lot to talk about, but first let's introduce ourselves. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson, the opinion editor, and to my left is...
I'm Edward Celaya, the opinion writer here at the Daily Star.
John DiOrlando, president and publisher.
Ron, would you like to...
Ron Barber, district director for Congresswoman Kirkpatrick.
Okay.
Ann Kirkpatrick, Congresswoman.
Great. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. I know we've tried to do this previously, but it was... I can't even imagine your schedule. So thank you for making time.
You're welcome.
So what has been going on in Washington?
A lot is going on. Let me just say my top legislative priority for Arizona is being a voice on the Appropriations Committee. So I campaigned on being on the Appropriations Committee. It's what they call an exclusive committee, so it's very difficult to get on to Appropriations. So the week after the election, I went back to Washington, D.C., met with all the members of what they call the Steering and Policy Committee. So the Steering and Policy Committee is a group of members appointed by Speaker Pelosi to make committee assignments. And I lobbied them for about 2 weeks. I wanted to be on appropriations, but because of this district, I wanted to be on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, and I finally got it. But I will tell you, it was a night and day process. I wrote letters. I made phone calls. I made personal visits. I ran people down in the hall. It's a very difficult committee to get on, but it's so good for Arizona to have somebody on appropriations. We had not had anybody on appropriations since Ed Pastor retired, and we lose out on federal funding. So as you know, over 80% of Arizona's land is public land. So we don't have the private property tax base that other states have to fund their projects, like Maryland and Connecticut. And so we really rely on those federal funds to fund our critical infrastructure projects. So I'm on the Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee and the Defense Subcommittee. So water is also a big issue for us in Arizona. So worked hard to get past the drought contingency plan and get funding for our water projects. But also, we're a border state, and so I've been doing probably 95% of my work now on immigration and border issues. I'm opposed to building a wall. That's a very expensive mistake. What we really need to do is expand and modernize our ports of entry. So I was recently down in the town of Douglas watching the congestion at the border. So you know, what I saw was four lanes coming in from Mexico converging into two lanes, and the wait time to cross was 3 to 4 hours. And so this is affecting commerce and trade in southern Arizona, and it's a big problem. So I'm working with the mayor, Mayor Uribe in Douglas, to get funding to modernize the ports of entry, but also our other ports of entry, Nogales and San Luis, are in the same situation. Because we really value Mexico as a trading partner. And recently I led a delegation of members of Congress, one from the Appropriations Committee, one from Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, to the border because I wanted them to see firsthand what it looks like. So they were both from the Midwest. And I think that what I'm finding is the farther away members of Congress are from a border, the less they understand about what is really going on, and the more the president's rhetoric tends to resonate with them. So I spend a lot of time on the floor of the House talking with my colleagues and saying, look, I represent the border in Arizona. What you're hearing from the press and from the administration is not what's going on. It's a safe border. We count on Mexico as a trading partner. we want a good relationship with them. We know our governor right now today is meeting with the governor of Sonora. I think that what a great relationship to build. So we as Arizonans on a border state understand the importance of having that really, really good relationship. And that's what I spend a lot of time on.
I'm curious about, since you have represented District 1, Northern Arizona, up to Utah, and now you're representing District 2, what is the difference in that experience and what you hear?
Yeah, there's really no difference.
Okay.
The one thing is that I feel like I'm the appropriator for the whole state because I have, at this point, represented all of the state of Arizona. And so I'm listening to all the other members of our delegation who want appropriation requests and moving those forward for them. So I really feel like I'm just representing Arizona on the committee. And then being on the defense committee, because this is a defense district, you know, trying to get funding for the military and for Fort Huachuca. So it's good. You know, I like my committee work. I really do. We saved the A-10. You know, we were able to get funding for 78 more F-35s. And that's all good for Southern Arizona.
Where do you think that we'll be a year from now regarding immigration?
I hope that we've solved this issue by a year from now. Although, John, I have to tell you, the reason I ran for Congress in the first place was I was frustrated in the state legislature because we were passing patchwork bills to deal with immigration. And I said it has to be a comprehensive immigration policy, and that has to come from the federal government. It has to be at the federal level. I'm disappointed that we haven't gotten it done yet.
You think we can do it in a year?
I think we can do it in a year. We've passed over 400 bills out of the House that are sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk, that he refuses to move forward. But I think if there's enough public opinion pushing for some kind of a reform, and especially what's going on right now, with these children, mothers and children at the border, I think that's going to capture the nation's attention and they're going to demand that something to be done.
Do you think that something for a lot of people is the wall?
I think that the lack of understanding is a virtual wall for people, and that's why we want to continue to bring members of Congress to the border to actually see what's happening.
Does anyone ever say no?
No, they don't. And the members who came left, they were just amazed at what they saw, and it was so different than their preconceived idea of what they were going to see. So it's worth the effort.
So as you probably know, the Casalitas Welcome Center has been operating over at the Pima County Juvenile Detention Center for some time now. And the county, as of 2 weeks ago, was waiting to hear about $470,000 worth of grant funding related to the Operation Stone Garden dollars. Can you kind of shed some light on what's happening with those dollars?
Sure. And let me just say, Sister Teresa is doing just a fabulous job at Casa Solitas. I mean, she's the only paid staff, and she has 400 volunteers coming every day. You know, we visited the monastery when they were at the monastery, people bringing in food, clothing, blankets, whatever was necessary. They've moved to a new location that we visited, the old juvenile detention center. We visited there recently. We were in the center. We went to the children's section and then to where they're holding young men. And the children's section just is heartbreaking. You know, just the saddest looks on their faces that I've ever seen. Children's with their mothers who've been traumatized by the journey to Arizona, to the border. They turned themselves in at ICE, and then there they are. They're sitting. They don't know what's going to be happening to them. And the men, a lot of them left just to save their lives. But I talked with a man who'd walked 2,000 miles from Guatemala, Central America, with his 9-year-old daughter. And I talked to him the day they crossed into Arizona. They were at Casa Solitas. And he told me that he had a good paying job in Guatemala. He was working for a banana shipping company. And the cartels came to him in the middle of the night and they said, if you don't turn over your paycheck every week, we're going to kill your family. So he left in the middle of the night with his 9-year-old daughter. They got a ride to the border and then they walked the 2,000 miles to Tucson. And that's how desperate it is. And I asked him, I said, you know, what's the status of the government in Guatemala? He said, there is no government. It's run by 8 cartels, and that's all there is. There is no government. And so one of the things that the Congress recently wanted to do was send financial aid to Guatemala. And so I made the point to them that, look, it's just going to go to fund cartels. There is no government of Guatemala. And that was a real eye-opener for them. So I feel like we bring an important voice from Southern Arizona to Congress about what's actually happening in to the south of us.
Related to that, I remember in the campaign we spoke, and you said that border issues per se weren't at the top of the priority list of the constituents you were talking to during the campaign. It was more kitchen table issues, I believe is the phrase you used. Do you continue to find that to be the case, or has that changed?
No, it has really changed, Tim. In the last year, it has really changed. And I didn't dream that we'd be dealing with these kind of border issues a year ago, but that's the reality that we're faced with. And we've got to do something that's meaningful, that's thoughtful, that's constructive, and provides safety for these people who are crossing.
When you mentioned the preconceived notions that were changed among people on this border tour, can you give any examples of what kind of preconceived notions?
Yeah, they had the notion that the border was a very dangerous place, that if you were at the border, you were most likely going to be assaulted, you were going to be robbed, you were going to be maybe shot, and that it was a very, very dangerous place. So those were the ideas that they had read about in their newspapers and in their media, and then they came here and they was like, oh, this is very safe, this is very orderly. You know, it was just a complete reversal of what they thought they would be seeing.
Thank you. Just to kind of get back to what you're hearing from constituents then, and to Tim's point then that now border issues have kind of jumped maybe kitchen table issues, where does impeachment fall on that list?
Yes, and so impeachment is the top issue I hear. You know, I've been doing Congress on Your Corner. One of the things that I really wanted to do is be accessible and visible. And so we've done 6 Congresses on Your Corner and had hundreds of people show up. And almost every single one of them has said, you've got to impeach, you've got to impeach. And this has been going on since the first of the year. You've got it impeached. And so there's a lot of public support for it. And you know, we're doing articles of impeachment now. I wasn't there, Edward, at first, I have to tell you. I was slow coming to the impeachment table. I mean, we've only done that 4 times in history. It's a big move to remove an elected president. But I started reading the Mueller report, and I got about 80 pages into it, and I said, you know, I'm a former Pima County prosecutor, and I said, if I had gotten a report like this as a prosecutor, I would have already issued 15 different charges, and so I'm called for impeachment then. So I was one of the first to come out in favor of impeachment.
You said that you hear the support for impeachment everywhere you go, but the district is not super one way or the other in terms of party registration. Are you surprised that that's what you're hearing?
I am surprised. You know, I mean, Cochise County has traditionally been the more conservative part of the district, and I'm still hearing it from people down there.
Do you hear people defending the president, and do you hear anything from that side?
Occasionally. You know, I just did a Congress on Your Corner here at a Safeway a couple of weekends ago, and there was a group of men who obviously didn't agree with me. There were about five in the group who came, and they said you probably don't want to talk with us. And I said, yeah, I want to hear your point of view. You know, you have a point that you want to present. You know, come and let's talk. So we actually sat down at a table, and I visited with them for quite a while, and let them say their piece. So I want to hear from everybody.
Was there anything that they said that struck any kind of chord with you or changed the way you saw something?
No.
Or vice versa?
No. But I wanted to hear them out.
Okay.
Kind of, again, along those same lines of you having a kind of broad tent in your district of constituents. Last week, Speaker Pelosi came out and said that the Democratic candidates need to remember November, and that what works in San Francisco doesn't necessarily work in Michigan. Do you think that there, especially with policies like Medicare for All from some of the different candidates, that they're maybe going a little bit too far left and scaring some potential voters away with these policies?
I'm not feeling that, Edward, and I'm not seeing that at all. There are about five different versions of Medicare, like I said, and I'm looking at each one to see which one I think makes the most sense. I do think everybody should have access to good health care, and Medicare is a system that works, and maybe there's a way to allow people to get on Medicare. One of the proposals that makes sense to me is allowing people to buy into Medicare and actually pay a premium like they would for private insurance. That makes it paid for, but we've got a lot of counties in Arizona that only have one insurance carrier. So if people had the opportunity to buy into Medicare, that would give them a second choice. I think it's really important that people have choice in how they access their health care.
With that being said, then, has there been a candidate that's caught your eye or somebody that right now you'd be willing to endorse or throw your support behind?
There has not. I have been watching the field, you know, their positions on Medicare for All are very different, and there's not one single one that really makes sense to me. And so I'm still developing my mind and my opinion on that.
What about the thought that, you know, Democrats always screw things up,
yeah.
And that even in this atmosphere and in this election cycle, that they're going to mess things up somehow and put up a candidate who can't win against Donald Trump? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a really important consideration. So that's why the Democratic Caucus has come up with our own legislative priorities. So I think it's really important that we legislate good legislation for the American people and that we're not just talking about impeachment. We're there to make lives better for the American people. For example, I support raising the minimum wage, paying our workers more. I support childcare for mothers who have to go to work. You know, there are things that we can do to help our workers do a better job, and they should have good jobs, good paying jobs, but they also should be able to live on what they make.
Outside of impeachment, what two things do you think that the public wants from Congress in the next year?
I think they want a balanced budget. I really do. I think this funding the government on continuing resolutions is not good, and I'm especially hearing from people who access some of the administrative agencies who don't know if they're going to be even open next month. And so, you know, the VA has done a good job of funding their budget on a very stabilized basis, and I think that we should do that overall for the country. So people have the surety and the expectation and the knowledge of what services and departments they can depend on. But, you know, there's now bubbling up talk about if we do another CR to just December 5th, that the government may shut down again. And that's been so expensive. I mean, that cost our state alone millions of dollars in lost revenue at our state parks, and devastated our employees. So we'd like to avoid that, but it's troublesome that talk is bubbling up again.
I was wondering, with the so much of what Donald Trump communicates comes through tweets and off-the-cuff sort of remarks, but with the California wildfires being what they are, Arizona has, you know, our own history with wildfires. Is there anything in any movement in that issue that has been going on? Are you troubled by what you hear with threats of from the president about, you know, withholding assistance, that sort of thing?
Very troubled. So Arizona's forests are a tinderbox. You know, we didn't get our summer monsoon season. You drive through the White Mountains up in northern Arizona, all the stock tanks are dry, all the ponds are dry, the forest is brittly dry. And I'm very, very concerned that we could have those kinds of catastrophic wildfires in Arizona. Very concerned.
Is there anything being done about that?
We're trying to address, as I said, the drought contingency plan that would provide some water relief to some of those really drought-stricken areas. But it may not be enough. We need to have a good winter, and we need to have our good winter snows again in northern Arizona in the White Mountains.
So you were the subject of a GOP fundraising email that used really provocative language like load me up and train my sights with ammunition. As a representative in the same district that saw a mass shooting with a sitting congresswoman attacked, number one, do you find yourself worrying for your safety? And number two, do you expect this to be kind of the norm in this upcoming election cycle?
Well, let me just say that my position on guns has evolved. So, you know, I grew up in rural Arizona, hunted with my dad, was a gun owner. And all of that changed for me when Gabby was shot. Gabby was my mentor in the state legislature. I was devastated by that. I have signed on to her legislation, H.R. 8, which calls for background checks. It's a very sensible bill. It even has some bipartisan support now. People realize that we've got to do something about this, and that's a common sense approach, a first step that we can take right now. And so we're hoping that that'll be taken up in the Senate. We've already passed it out of the House, and hopefully it'll be bipartisan in the Senate. I think we can get this done.
Got you. But do you think this is the sort of rhetoric that you'll be facing from GOP challengers
in the upcoming election? I hope not. I really hope that we can restore civility, and we've always run a positive campaign and not used that kind of rhetoric in our campaign, and we'll continue to do that.
You've been in Congress previously. I'm wondering, with the Republicans in control of the House and now with the Democrats, and just the advent of how Congress operates or doesn't operate now with the atmosphere in Trump, can you just sort of reflect a bit on what the differences are and how that affects Arizonans?
Sure. You know, I was first elected in 2008. I was able to get most, if not all, of the Arizona delegation to sign on to my legislation. It was very bipartisan. We met for breakfast once a month in a bipartisan manner. Senators and House of Representatives members sat down for breakfast, talked about what we could do for Arizona. We don't have those breakfasts anymore, and I honestly have never seen Congress as divided and as divisive as it is right now. And that's too bad. I really don't think it's good for our country. So we've gone from the day when we had that kind of camaraderie, bipartisan camaraderie, could actually get things done for Arizona, to a situation where we're basically in a stalemate.
Do you think that's the result of Donald Trump being in office? And if so, if he were to be removed next year, do you think that could change and that perhaps there'd be a return to maybe a more civil environment.
I can't say that he's the cause. There's no evidence of that. So I can't really say that that's what's happening. I am curious about it. I still try to sit by my Republican colleagues every week, but they're not as forthcoming as they once were. And you know, one sort of privately told me that if they're seen cooperating with a Democrat, they're going to get a primary opponent. And so that's happened to a couple of them already. And so I think that might be a chilling factor in their wanting to reach across the aisle and have that dialogue.
Seen by who?
By the Trump administration.
So, Tim, do you have?
Well, adding to that, then, if that's the problem, certainly impeachment isn't the solution. So how do you proceed with an impeachment that's just going to worsen this divide that you say is making work difficult, if not impossible, in the House?
Article 1 sets forth the legislature's powers, the legislative branch powers, and I think we have a duty to the American people to conduct the investigations. You know, six committees are doing their work. I think we have a duty to the American people to make that report available to them so they can read it and draw their own conclusion. So that's where we are right now. Where it's ultimately going to end up, I can't say right now. But we need to do the thorough investigation. We need for the American people to know what's going on. And beyond that, I just can't speculate.
Do you think that the knowledge of just basic civics, Article 1, the Constitution, who's supposed to do what in our system of government? I have been saddened by how, it is sort of a sweeping generalization, but just how uninformed people are about our basic form of government.
It's too bad. You know, I have none of my children had civics in school, none of them. And so what we decided to do, we watched a lot of the History Channel because we wanted them to at least know some history and background about this country. But there are a lot of people who really just don't know what's involved and what our Constitution is about.
So how do we – I was just in Philadelphia and saw – two copies of the Constitution in Independence Hall and then at the Constitution Center, and they were both opened to the page with the impeachment.
Oh, interesting. That's so interesting. I've been to both of those places. Yeah. Interesting.
And they said, you know, they change pages every so often. But so I thought that was maybe coincidence.
Yeah, just
clearly
a coincidence.
Just like the big line of impeachment books for sale in the gift shop.
Oh, yes.
But, how do we fix that? How do we educate people? How do we transmit that information that is so foundational to this entire conversation?
I think it has to be done locally. I really do. And so that's why I'm doing these Congress on Your Corner. It's an opportunity for me to talk one-on-one with people and somewhat educate them to the process. But also we're doing town halls. So we're doing our fourth town hall tomorrow night at Pima Community College. And it's a good opportunity. Ron will be the moderator, and he takes questions from the audience. A lot of them are the same questions, so he kind of distills them into a question. So it'll be from 5:30 to 6:30 at Pima Community College.
Which campus?
And it's at the downtown?
No, Broadway.
No, okay.
Gotcha.
Broadway.
Got it. Okay, gotcha.
Great.
So I got a question.
Okay.
So I think that a lot of the general public has one of two different views of what Congress people kind of do with their time, one being the House of Cards kind of version of what goes on with Congress people, and then the other being just kind of they're out there just working all the way to the bone, you know, to the grindstone sort of thing. Can you kind of describe what is your day-to-day in D.C. like?
Sure. When I was first elected, Senator Kyle as I said, kind of took me under his wing, and he said, "Ann, there are two kinds of members of Congress. There are workhorses and show horses, and you're going to be a workhorse." And that's how I feel. I am working night and day on legislation for Arizona. And I've had a good track record, a really, really, really good track record of getting it done. And that's what I'm there to do. But it is a lot of work. It is not easy, and it's constant. And, you know, passing legislation is like eating an ice cream cone in Tucson in the middle of the summer. You think you've got it done, and all of a sudden it's dripped away. So it's a never sure thing until it's never, you know, passed until it's passed. And so it's a full-time, constant job.
NAFTA, or the new NAFTA, is that going to come up for vote? Is that going to pass?
I believe that's going to come up for a vote in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. We need it. NAFTA is long time overdue for as we know, modernization, but we need it. We need it. And so I was one of the first to come out and support of the NAFTA legislation because it's so important to Southern Arizona's economy. So I hope that leadership has said they'd like to pass it before the end of the year. I hope we pass it before the end of the month.
Can I follow up on that? Maybe I'm misremembering the history here. It's my memory that you just came out in support of that sometime in the last 2 weeks to a month.
You're right about that.
Yeah. So how can you be one of the first to have supported it then? Isn't that what you just said?
Oh, I did just say that, but maybe you're right about that, Tim.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the holdup for you been a while since it was negotiated.
Right. That's right. The holdup for me was labor. And so we were pushing for some changes in NAFTA. One was raising the minimum wage so that the workers would be paid. And then one was lowering prescription drug costs. So those were the two top priorities that I was pushing for in the legislation.
What do you think is holding up kind of more broad Democratic support than for passing it?
I don't know. I wish I had an explanation for you, but I don't. I honestly don't know. As I said, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about NAFTA and about the border, and especially the farther away you get from it, and that may be just perception.
With the you mentioned the drought contingency plan, which kind of went down to the wire, as I recall.
Yes.
What going forward, we have climate change. We have you mentioned trying to eat an ice cream cone in the middle of a Tucson summer, which will get more and more difficult. But what is happening at this stage with water policy? What do Arizonans need to be looking out for in terms of changes? Or I guess we all think generally water will be there. We know there are issues, but what, from a average Arizonan kind of point of view, can you share with the precautions and the efforts that are being taken to make sure that we have a sustainable source of water?
Well, the first thing is what we can do to take individual responsibility for conserving water, and just re-looking at how we use water as our personally and as our families. And making an effort to conserve. Long term, there's talk about reactivating the desalinization plant in Yuma and taking that Gulf of California water and bringing it into Arizona. That's going to be very expensive. So one way or the other, water's going to get expensive in Arizona. There's no question about it. Then there's a group that's pushing for a pipeline to run diagonally across Arizona, through Nevada, and into Northern California, tapping into a water source there. That's also just going to be very expensive. I don't know that 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 makes a lot of sense.
And I'm sure all those communities along that pipeline
oh, sure.
will be happy to see
oh,
it
yeah, see a pipeline
whiz
yeah.
by.
Right, right.
Okay. Other things that are kind of not as flashy or headline-y as impeachment that should be on the radars of Arizonans, specifically Southern Arizonans.
Yes, I really think that the economic development is important. And as I said, you know, the University of Arizona is running some great programs along that line, and that's my focus is economic development. But the University of Arizona, I think, is a leader in terms of a lot of research and development that can be used for economic development here in Southern Arizona. I support their efforts. I've met with President Robbins several times to get his vision of how the university can help contribute to our economic development. You know, they're just, I mean, I'm a little biased since I'm an alum, but I really think they're a great treasure for us to use in terms of great ideas, innovation, moving Southern Arizona forward.
And were you surprised, just to switch topics briefly, were you surprised by the vote on the sanctuary Prop 205 and how big the margin against it was?
I was surprised at how big the margin was. I've said all along it's up to the Tucson citizens to make that decision, but it was pretty overwhelming. So I was surprised when I saw the number last night. We were at the Hotel Congress watching the returns, and overwhelmingly, Tucson voices were heard, and they were heard very loud, loud and clear.
Was that something, the sanctuary effort, was that something you heard about from colleagues in Washington? Were people from elsewhere talking about it?
People were not really talking that much about it. It was much more a local issue, largely led by the churches here in Southern Arizona, and that's who I was hearing from. Pushing for that effort, and I understand where they're coming from, but we've got to have a humane process for handling these people who are crossing into our country for safety reasons, and we're not there yet, and we need to be.
So, going back to something you said earlier about how you think immigration can be wrapped up, solved, fixed within a year. Given all the divisiveness that we've talked about, the obstacles, political and otherwise, is that realistic?
I think when you talk about it in terms of trade relations with Mexico, that makes sense. So it kind of separates that issue from what's being talked about right now. But don't get me wrong, there are good guys and bad guys at the border. And you know, I have no tolerance whatsoever for the bad guys, but there are good people who want to come in to our country and contribute to our economy, and so let's focus on the good guys, and making our economy stronger, creating good paying jobs. We need that workforce in Arizona. So I was just down in Yuma, talking with the farmers down there, and of course they want a very healthy, rapid guest worker program, because they're getting ready to harvest their fields in August, and they needed the workers. And they said, we need a rapid guest worker program. We've worked with some of these people for generations. They've come over, harvested. They don't want to live here. They've worked for us. Then they go back and stay in Mexico. So we've got a lot of work to do.
Is there a linchpin to that you think you could get bipartisan support? Is trade that issue?
I think trade is that issue. I really do. I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense nationally, and it changes the dialogue.
Tim, do you have any other questions?
No, I'm all set.
What else do you think we should know?
Well, you know, it's interesting that that the president talks about these trade wars, and I just came back from a 10-day trip to China, and they are very concerned about trade wars with the United States. So they count on being able to ship their goods here and have a robust trading relationship with our country. And I met with some of their members of parliament, and they basically said, have you guys lost your mind? and you know, it just doesn't make sense to them. And I tried to explain to them that Congress has a different position on trade from the president. But it was really hard for them to grasp that what that meant, because they have a very authoritarian system. And there's one message that goes out, and everybody's on point with that message. And they don't understand how we could have an independent Congress differing with the president and putting out a different kind of message. So it was important to have that conversation with them and build those relationships. So they are now going to come to Washington, D.C., which I think is going to be a great opportunity to continue to build that relationship. And then they can see that for themselves how our Congress works. So I'm excited about that.
What do you think they will see
I think they'll see vigorous debate. I think they'll see, you know, different opinions debated on the floor. I don't think they have that kind of debate that we have on the floor of the House. And it's something I've come to treasure more and more and more about our system, is that we thoroughly debate this legislation in front of the American people. They can see what's going on, and I don't think they have that kind of transparency and accountability.
And to circle back to the impeachment, you came out saying they're calling for an investigation from the Mueller report. Now that there's all the Ukraine stuff, has that changed what you think should be the basis for impeachment, or how do you view it now? What do you think would be the most the strongest way to move forward?
I think what we're doing right now, having the committees do their investigations, they're calling members of the administration. Some of them are ignoring the subpoenas. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. We've never faced that in our country before. And it's disturbing to me, because the American people deserve to know. And the fact that this president is blocking that effort really, really disturbs me. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And what about the idea that some people have kind of put forward that, yeah, he did that, he had those conversations, but that's not an impeachable offense, that's okay to do?
Yeah, I think they're wrong about that, quite honestly. When you're asking a foreign country to deliver political consequences to your opponent, I think that violates everything in our Constitution, and it's morally reprehensible.
Okay. Any other thoughts or questions? No? All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.